sack. Is that all you get for your money? And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning and welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team, and I'm here with Becky Ivins.
Well, good morning, Mark.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great today. I had a good week. How about you?
It's been a great week.
Yeah?
Very busy.
I'm doing something that I love to do today, which is show property.
Something you don't do a whole lot anymore.
I don't, because I've got
the team.
The team that shows property. But this was a referral from a personal friend, and it has been so fun to be able to show property. The challenge is taking care of the rest of your business while you're out showing property all day.
Working with buyers is so much fun because you get to hear their thoughts, what's happening in their lives, how they would use the areas, what, you know, and you really get to jump in with people's lives.
These particular folks are thought they were going to follow along behind me. And I said, well, you can do that if you want to. And they said, well, because of COVID, we figured that you might not want us in your car. Mm-hmm. I said, well, I'm great with you in my car. But if you don't want to, you don't have to. But the benefit to having them in your car is, especially the two of, if there's two, mm-hmm. they talk to each other about what they've just seen, and you get to hear what do they like, what do they not like, what did they find intriguing, something they never mentioned, but they like it about a particular property, right? So this is a little bit of a challenge because they're looking for things that are not categories in the multi-list, which is privacy. Like they want trees around and space around so that they don't feel like they're being peered into by neighbors. So, and that's hard to find. Mm-hmm. And even looking at the overhead picture, sometimes that's hard to find.
I had a person recently who they wanted space where it was private because they were going to put in a pool, and they wanted to be very private to that pool. It was very important to them that they can choose what to wear.
Yeah, or not.
Correct.
Right. I gotcha. You know something? Before we go any further, let's get Larry Stein's calling in.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, Larry Stein, good morning.
For instance, we had Larry Stein, Oklahoma
County Assessor. And do we have you, Larry? Okay, we're having a little bit of technical difficulty, but we are going to get that figured out. And let's introduce our guest today, Mark.
I'm excited. I've been looking forward to this all week of having Ron Shalott with us, our attorney at the law. And just every time Ron's on, I tell you, learn so much.
And that today's show is about the Landlord-Tenant Act, which you would think that realtors, we want to sell you something, right? Sell your house for you, sell you a home. A lot of you and us own rental property, and we have family members who are tenants in rental property, and it's important that we understand what is right and what's not right about the Landlord-Tenant Act. So good morning, Ron Shalott.
Good morning, Becky. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning,
Ron.
Good
to see you again. Been a while. I don't think you were here last time I was here, and you were up doing something.
Yeah, I was off that Saturday.
Was that getting married?
I believe I was getting married. Just a little thing.
So why were you off? I don't get that one. Boy, must be
I'm
nice.
I'm a whole new man, Ron.
Whole new man. All right, that's wonderful. Well, Becky, you called me about to talk about the Oklahoma Residential Landlord and Tenant Act, and a couple things to start out with. First off, if you get nothing else out of this discussion today, let me give you two things. One, if you got any questions about this and you have a smartphone, you know, iPhone, whatever it is, go to the App Store, find OBA Young Lawyers app. Download that app. Why do I say that? Because in that app are a bunch of things that will help you with regard to the law and your legal rights and obligations and duties. Get that app on your phone. One of the things on the app, there's driving, legal, your responsibility, independent living. Click on the independent living and you'll find employment, medical treatment, privacy, consumer credit, bankruptcy, lease agreements. And it talks about leases, landlord-tenant. Great app to have. It gives you that kind of information. Or if you don't have a smartphone or aren't able to do that, go to the Oklahoma Bar Association website, okbar.org. On that website, there's public information. You can either get the pamphlet on the Residential Landlord-Tenant Act, or you can look at it online. And that's the big thing now is look at it online. They don't like to print those or mail those out anymore. So you can do that. You have access all the time to it, and you'll find out practically all the information we're going to talk about today anyway, and have that all right there for you.
Well, and I want you to invite you guys to join us in our conversation and ask questions, because everybody that's ever leased anything or is leasing property definitely is interested in this, because you need to know what the rules are and what the laws are. And Larry Stein is back, our Oklahoma County Assessor. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Becky. How are you today?
Well, I'm up early and ready. How about you?
Me too. I was just wanted to remind everybody, if I could, about the March 15th deadline for homestead exemption filing, and it can save you money up to nearly $137 a year in Oklahoma County, and it also protects your home in case you're sued civilly. So it's something that's very important for you to be able to save and preserve your property and save money.
Can you do it online nowadays?
You can get the form online and then mail it in. There's not a provision yet for us to take a certified signature on that. You don't have to notarize it or anything, but we need to have it filed in our office by a postmark of the 15th.
Okay. So Oklahoma County, most every other county as well.
Every county in the state. And if you're in another county and you're listening to this, you can take the form off of our website. It's over on the left-hand column where we have all the forms listed, and you can use that form in any one of the counties in the 77 counties in the state of Oklahoma.
Awesome.
We encourage our listeners, if you have not been to the Oklahoma County Assessor's website and see what Larry Stein has done there, go visit. It is so easy to navigate, so easy to get great information. And thank you so much, Mr. Stein, for what you've done there. It is a great service.
It's a great staff that makes that site possible, and they are working hard every day to make it even better. And there's a lot of neat features, and if you ever have any questions, you can always call our office at 713-1201, and we'll be happy to help.
Thank you, Larry.
We'll be right back with Ron Shalhot and your questions about the Tenant-Landlord Act on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, KTOK 1000. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. We're here with Ron Shalhot, attorney at law, and we're talking about the Landlord-Tenant Act. And if you want to call in with your questions, 840-1000, 840-1000. And
as though nobody knows what 1000 is.
I know,
right? Well, Ron, tell me, where do we start with the Oklahoma Landlord-Tenant Act?
Well, I do want to repeat what I said in the first segment. Smartphone OBA Young Adult Guide. Get that on your app because it gives you a lot of great things in terms of the law, including about leases, and it'll help you through like driving, your legal responsibilities, things like that. Great app to have, so you know, look at that.
It's OBA what?
OBA Young Adult Guide. Young Adult Guide. Just type that into your app store. You'll find it. And it's a great app to have for Oklahoma for your legal rights, responsibilities. Gives you some good advice on things. Okay, the Residential Landlord-Tenant Act, we sometimes gloss over the one word that's in there that's really important, residential, because the act applies to residential leases, not commercial leases. In fact, the Act itself talks about limitations where it doesn't apply, and there are some places where it does not apply, but it is for residences, not commercial.
Office space, warehouse space, it does not?
Commercial.
Okay.
Right.
Only residential.
Only residential, and it was adopted to have some rules out there for people who are renting living places, all right? It doesn't apply if you're in a dormitory at a college or a fraternity house or, you know, certain situation, or even it doesn't even apply where you have a contract for deed, because that's actually almost a purchase situation. So it does cover residential, whether it is single occupancy or multi-person occupancy, duplex, fourplex, things like that. So it does apply to those situations. What you have to remember is that your lease is a contract. That's an agreement. It gives you certain permissions, but also certain obligations. And when I say you, I mean the person who is renting and the person who owns it and is renting it to another person. The renter is not the owner. They just have a license or permission to be on or utilize the property. And so you have to understand this is an agreement. This is a contract between two people. And although you can have a non-written contract, a verbal contract, if it's a short duration, if it's a longer duration, it must be in writing. And so you have to be careful in those situations. But if it's oral, if it's not in writing, for example, let's say you're just renting for a month or 2 months, you know, a short-term situation, then the terms of the Residential Landlord-Tenant Act still apply. But it doesn't apply if you're renting a motel room, for example, but if you are renting a residential property, it does apply. So it's important to be aware of it. And that's where, like the app I've talked about or going to the Bar Association website, important to find out, well, what are my obligations? What are my rights in that regard? And it's fairly common sense as to what your obligations are and what the landlord can and can't do. A lot of the fairness situation. But there are some specifics in there. And your lease cannot waive the terms of the Residential Landlord-Tenant Act.
Right. Like you can't, if you're... You think you can kick somebody out if they're 2 days late on their rent, and it's clearly written in your lease that you can do that. Can you do that, Ron?
Or even worse, you get some of those situations such as where they're not in a breach, but you still want to evict them, kick them out. No, you have to follow the terms of the lease. They have to follow the eviction process. You can't just lock them out. You can't just throw them out straight away. You have to follow the legal process, you know, in that regard. You know, if somebody's wearing an OU sweatshirt and you're an OSU fan, you know, that's not a breach of the agreement. So, you can't waive the terms of the act. You can't waive things such as providing a habitable living condition. You can't waive things such as getting away with no heat in the residence or no water. Those things cannot be waived because those are part of the Residential Landlord-Tenant Act. That's what's important,
right,
is that they have to be habitable living conditions, and the Act talks about what is required and then what would happen if they're not provided with regards to the lease.
So duties of the landlord to the tenant includes providing a habitable place to live, right?
Correct. But the tenant also has duties. So the tenant has duties. And we don't think about this too much, but it does happen, which, for example, the tenant has the duty to use safety, to not allow ashes or garbage or rubbish to collect on the property, to be sanitary, not to destroy things, and not to disable important things such as smoke detectors, not to destroy the property. There are a number of things that are required of even the tenant, not to engage in criminal activity on the property, not to have a meth house, for example, or prostitution arrangement, or any other kind of fencing, you know, not fencing around the fence, but like you're fencing property, stolen property. So you cannot use them for illegal purposes, and so the tenant has obligations as well. And it's a lot of the common sense that you would think about, that you want to live there, the owner wants you to live there, and so you act fairly toward one another, but the act does have some of the requirements in it. Now, I must say that the act isn't always as specific as I like, because there's a lot of different properties. You know, if you've got a house, is it a two-bedroom, one-bedroom house, or with an upstairs and a basement, and how does that work? Or if it's a apartment complex, you know that those are two different things and have different aspects to them. So consequently, the act covers it all, but it's not as specific on certain things, and that's where people sometimes wonder, well, what am I required to do? And that's where lawyers look at it and try to give an opinion. But lawyers don't even always have the proper answer. We just have more of a common sense type of solution.
That's my question, Ron, is who determines for the landlord side he's providing habitable environment, and from the tenant side that they're not just recklessly destroying the place?
Well, it is a contract, so you have those obligations to provide what you're required to do under the act and even under the terms of the contract. Who ultimately decides it? Well, if you all can't agree, that's why we have a court system with a judge, is to make those kind of decisions for us. Or you can go to a mediation and see a mediator, a person who tries to resolve it without going through the court system. You can ask a lawyer. A lawyer can give you his or her viewpoint or opinion. Sometimes it's clear. Sometimes there's case law. Sometimes it's specific in the statute. And sometimes it's not. So the lawyer would say, well, it's probably going to go like this. Or if you took it to a judge, this is probably what the court's going to do, and would evaluate the information, evaluate the evidence. So you certainly want to have definitive answers, but it's not always possible. And that's why we sometimes have legal disputes in courts.
Well, but the guidelines are right there in the Landlord-Tenant Act. Like, what is the seller required, what is the landlord required to provide? Well, yeah, they have to maintain in good and safe working order and condition the electrical, plumbing, sanitary, heating, ventilating, air conditioning, and other facilities and appliances, like maybe an elevator if you're in an apartment complex. So we're going to talk about this in much more detail. If you want to call, it's 840-1000.
And we'll be right back with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member of the Becky Ivins team. And Becky and I are here with Ron Shalhoub, attorney at law, talking about tenants in the Landlord-Tenant Act. And if you want to know more about Ron, you can go to OklahomaCityLawyer.com. That's OKCityLawyer.com. Or go to BeckyIvins.com and click on Becky's Favorites.
That sounds like you've been around since before the internet, Ron.
Actually, I think I was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got when I created that, I thought, oh, this is a nifty name. I'll just do this and I'll change it later. And, you know, 15 years later, I have yet to change it.
Well, I thought that when you said you created it, I thought you were about to go head-to-head with Al Gore creating the internet, right?
No comment.
Okay.
All Our word of the day is brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing from a small repair to a complete replacement. Give them a call at 728-3700, 728-3700. Ron, what's our word of the day?
Word of the day is tenant. T-E-N-A-N-T. Tenant.
Okay.
I always try to put two N's in there for some reason, but it's only one.
Well, most people try to put two E's. But it's T-E-N-A-N-T. That's the English word.
And what's the actual legal definition of
Well, the tenant comes from the French word.
You love your French words.
Yeah, I love my French word. It's a verb, tenir, which, you know, Mark has taken French, right? You know what that means, to hold.
Oh, sure. That was right at the tip of my tongue right there.
You're about to say it, yes. and I jumped in. I'm sorry.
Oui.
It's one, and the idea is one who holds land or possessions of another, and the other has the title, okay? So one who holds or occupies land of another by an agreement is a tenant. We also call them a renter, a lessee, an occupant. We have all kinds of names for them and never use the same word twice. In fact, I've seen some rental agreements where they'll say tenant one time and renter another time and lessee another time, and that makes it really confusing, but they're all the same. So tenant is the person who rents or holds or has possession of the property.
Occupies the property of another.
Right.
But it's theirs, basically. The tenant has the right to use that property.
They have
as
a license.
Though it's their own, sort of, right?
They have a license.
Oh, there you go.
That's the way I would look at it. It is a license to use.
Okay. And
because whenever you are not an owner of the property, you can't do anything with it you want. You have certain limitations. But you have this right to use. And what is that right, or what determines that right? Well, there's two things. If it's the residential and it comes under the Residential Landlord-Tenant Act, then you look at the act. And also you look at the agreement. Now, when I say agreement, it could be oral, but you should have it in writing. And I always suggest this to everybody. I don't always follow my own advice, but I always suggest get it in writing, because that's the way you'll know later on what you can do and what you can't do, what the owner can do and can't do. And just as important as getting it in writing is read the lease.
Do you know something? I do not believe how every time someone comes to my office to sign a lease, and they just sign it. And I'm going, well, would you like to read it? Because there are provisions in there you need to read. No, that's okay.
I think we've been conditioned because, like, we have to do these clicky agreement for every app that we download, for everything, you know, it's just agree and this.
To the terms and service.
Right. Mm-hmm. I want to play this little balloon popping game, and I have an agreement that 4 pages, so very few people ever read all those.
Well, Mark, I hate to tell you this, but even before the internet, people weren't reading agreements.
human nature is that, yes, what you're telling me, Ron?
When I was a much younger lawyer and first started back in the early 80s, prior to Senator Gore, there was a situation where we had the Oklahoma County Bar Association would have a referral service, and they refer out certain situations that came to the call. And one of the things I was on was landlord-tenant. I get a lot of telephone calls from people who were tenants. And, of course, one of the questions I have, what does your agreement say? And their answer would be, I don't know.
Or I can't even, I don't know, I can't find it. I don't know
so,
where it is.
Where is it?
That's one of the first things is you want to know, what does that agreement say? So read it, because it's very important. It is a contract, and it states what you can do, can't do. There are certain things that could be in there that are not covered by the act, and consequently you want to know those things. Such as pets. Are you allowed to have pets in there? Other things such as smoking. Is smoking allowed in there? What about satellite dishes? Usually if you're renting a house, that could be an issue.
That came up with me this week. I had a tenant that happened to call and say, by the way, I'm getting dish this week. And they said they had to get permission of the landlord. And I said, Well, did you read your lease? Because you do not have permission to attach anything to the roof of the house. And I said, tell them that they can erect a pole, but you're going to be responsible for removing that pole and dish when you leave. Because I don't want, I mean, I sold a house one time that had seven dishes on top of it. They never one ever removes them because it creates a hole. So anyway.
Yeah, so you have those kind of ones. And today we have like cannabis policy.
Right.
So some people are in favor, some people are opposed, whatever your thoughts are on that. But still, you need to know about that smoking, which is something that can or cannot be an issue. Vehicle restrictions, how many vehicles can you have? Where can they be parked at? Usually in a multi-family area, that's where it's more important. But you even have that with houses because you can have a situation where you rent a house and they'll let you park in the driveway but not in the street. I mean, there's always those possibilities as well. So you need to know what are the limitations that you can be facing. Guest policy, number of occupants. We get the situation or have had the situation before, which is where I will sign the lease, I'll rent it, but how many people can live there? If the owner only assumed I was going to be the sole occupant there, maybe they don't want a whole bunch of people there. But maybe I would like to have a whole bunch of people there to help me pay for the rent. So I've got, you know, a dozen people living there. Not that many, but, you know, three or four or kids.
I had a rental that was a three-bedroom, one-bath, small place. And the people moved in with two little kids. And they were small kids. I want to tell you, I paid more sewer stuff because they subsequently, while they were there, had three more children. And there's a difference in four people and seven people in a home on your sewer line and the capabilities of the bathroom handling that many people, you know.
Well, and we talked about the landlord providing plumbing. The tenant has the duty to use that properly. So you can't just flush everything in the world down the toilet either, because that can create sewer issues, backup issues that the landlord mm-hmm. may have to repair and then may look at the tenant to reimburse for.
My leases actually say that the only thing that can be flushed down the toilets is, you know, typical human waste and commercial toilet paper.
That's because your attorney is the son of a plumber.
There you go.
So I'm very well aware of those things. But getting away from the potty jokes, you also have to look at such things as, is it one tenant or are the co-tenants? Do both tenants sign? And if so, what are the obligations? If you are the tenant and you have a co-tenant, what if your partner or co-tenant leaves? Does that leave you in the lurch? So there are a number of things along those lines. What happens if there's a divorce or if you stop cohabitating with the other person, your significant other? So there are a lot of situations where you want to make sure the lease addresses those, or at least you're aware of it. So if you bring in a significant other, can you do that? What about if they have kids? What about if they have gerbils or cats? You know, what's allowed? Is a gerbil allowed? What about a cat? So you want to look at those kind of situations and see what your lease says. That's why you have to read it. You have to look at it. You don't necessarily have to read every single word, but if you look at the headings, you can kind of get the idea of what it covers and then see that. Another important thing I think in a lease is, who do you contact? Is it clear in there? Who do you contact? Is there a specific way to contact a person, not just a, we'll call this number and you get this big company? Is there an email address? Because if things go south, ice storm or sewer backup, whatever, you want somebody that you can talk to 24/7 and get a response from, or if they're not responsive, somebody that you can call and talk to and say, hey, this is not right.
Ron, from the tenant side of things, as we're talking about today, on all of it, what is the thing that you see that tenants most misunderstand that they think the landlord is responsible for and the landlord's not necessarily responsible legally?
Well, the one that I get the most often is, can I walk out of my lease? Can I break my lease? Sometimes something happens or they lose a job, or there's a lot of other reasons for that. That's the one that is most often. But as far as landlord responsibility, often it's things such as providing services, things such as the plumbing is a big factor. Sometimes there's a water leak. With the ice storms we've had, there's damage. What happens to my property if it gets damaged from that? You have to look then, is it something that the landlord caused or didn't prevent, or is it something that's simply an act of God, so to speak, that no one could have seen a meteor coming through the roof of the house? You know, that kind of situation.
Or an airplane part falling from the sky.
Yes.
Right.
Which, does that happen? Yeah, it does. So, and it can happen. Or someone driving their car through your front room. So you do have those kind of situations. And there is the question of what happens to, if my stuff is damaged, I'm the renter, if my stuff is damaged as a result of the consequence. And you do want to be aware of that, and do want to be aware that you may not be covered by the landlord's insurance, and the landlord may not be obligated to reimburse you for certain things. So you want to look at such things as, renter's insurance to help cover it. And that's one of the things that in the Young Adult Guide app, it talks a bit about that. So very important that you're aware of those.
We'll be back right after this break with Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. We're here with Ron Shalhot talking about Landlord-Tenant Act from the perspective of the tenant. Next week, Ron, we'll be talking about from the perspective of the landlord.
Landlord, right.
Yes. But today we want to kind of finish up our time here with, what are the tenant's duties and what are the tenant's rights? What do they really have to do and what do they really have the right?
And that's a very broad question that covers a lot of ground. We were talking over the break that, we're talking about the tenant side, but it actually spills over with the landlord too, and the landlord spills over the tenant, because it is a mutual obligation of two parties. So it intersects. I mean, the landlord has to keep the common areas clean and safe. They have to keep the unit in a safe and livable condition with the electrical, plumbing, sanitation, the heating, air conditioning. There must be trash receptacles if you've got multifamily units that are available. That's why you see the big trash dump areas. And they can have an agreement on specific repairs, but it has to be conspicuous and in writing, so that the tenant is not surprised by it and really needs to go over the situation. The tenant has to use the property to safe, clean, and sanitary condition, has to dispose of ashes, garbage, rubbish, other waste, must keep the place clean and in a sanitary condition. And you can understand that, especially if you've got a multifamily listing, or even a house that you don't want the tenant just throwing garbage in the front room and leaving it and making it difficult, which invites rodents and all kind of nasty things as well. The tenant is responsible to keep the plumbing and the units in a clean and sanitary condition, not repair them necessarily, but not misuse them and not destroy them, not to destroy electrical, heating, ventilating, air conditioning, the smoke detectors, things of that nature. The tenant isn't supposed to deliberately or negligently destroy, deface, or damage the property. So you have those kind of obligations, as well as not allow an animal or pet or other person to destroy it. You can have an animal or pet if it's allowed in the lease, but not all leases allow that. And some leases allow how many pets. You got to think about this. You know, how many dogs can I have? How big can I have dogs, or can I only have cats, or can I not have cats or dogs and can only have other critters? And if so, you want to think about, well, does that apply to fish? If I have a betta fish, is that forbidden under the lease? You know, betta fish don't usually destroy anything. However, you have to look at the lease to see what that allows and comply with that. And then the tenant also is not to engage in any criminal activity. So if you think about criminal activity, destructive activity, that's really what the tenant is not supposed to do and how the tenant is supposed to act appropriately, just as if it is their own property.
Does a tenant have a right of privacy from a landlord? Like if you have a landlord who is overly curious or overly, you know.
Well, you know, we lived in an apartment for 6 months very early in our marriage, and the guy that the handyman or whoever the repair person was for this apartment complex knocked once with his left hand and opened the door with a key with his right hand. And I want to tell you, that happened 5 or 6 times. I had a brand new baby.
Oh, wow.
I was sitting there nursing the baby, and here comes this guy into my house. That happened once. Then I called my Uncle George. And the next time he came in, a .45 was pointing at him.
I was going to say, in Oklahoma, that's kind of a dangerous thing to do because you might find yourself on the wrong end of a firearm. Or sometimes an individual gets surprised, and sadly we've had this situation in the United States where walk in and you get shot. And that can lead to a lot of very sad consequences as a result. To answer your question, Mark, the lease can talk about when a landlord can enter, but generally a landlord can only enter in the event of an emergency. That's where they can enter at really any time if there's an emergency situation. However, the tenant can allow them in to inspect, repair, and it has to be reasonable in the sense of the tenant can't withhold the inspection or repair. So the tenant has to act reasonably on that. The landlord, though, doesn't have a right just to enter at any time for any reason.
Well, and, you know, there comes things like this, like, well, I want, the landlord says, well, I want to paint the kitchen cabinets tomorrow. I'm supposed to give you a 24-hour notice. So why don't, you know, be sure and have those empty for me? Well, is that reasonable? I mean, maybe they had to work a double shift the day before.
Right.
Or the day of. That's not, in my mind, that's not reasonable.
Well, the landlord can effectuate repairs on the premises or an update, but there does have to be a reasonable notice to that. It cannot put the tenant out in terms of tenancy and quiet enjoyment of it. Is it something that they need to do right then, such as paint the cabinets? Well, if you're 2 months away from your tenancy being done, then they can certainly wait until your tenancy is done and until you're out and
right.
Do it at that point.
But if you need to treat for termites,
that's a whole different thing.
Well, you don't want to wait 2 months to do that.
Right.
And then what my pet peeve is a tenant that does not report something broken or damaged in a property. And, I mean, if there's something, if you've got something leaking, good grief. Report it so that we can prevent any further damage.
Unless, of course, the tenant caused that, then they may not be really wanting to fess up about it because
I know, my pet peeve, because there's other damage done because I don't have the opportunity to fix it if they don't tell me it's done. We've got Ann from Northwest Oklahoma City on the line. Good morning, Ann.
Hi, guys. I've just caught the last part of your program, and I'm wondering how a landlord could get the manual for what the tenant rights are and the landlord rights are.
That's pretty easy.
Yep.
First of all, you could just Google it. Just go Oklahoma Landlord Tenant Act. Now, this gets updated from time to time. You can go to Oklahoma... Well, the Oklahoma Real Estate Commission website always has the updated version on there.
Or you can go to okbar.org or Google the Oklahoma Bar Association. There are public documents on there, and you can find it there. If you have a smartphone, again, I'll say download the OBA Young Adult Guide. It will have not the entire act on there, but it will have an explanation of a lot of that. But you can get the Act itself from the Oklahoma Supreme Court Network, OSCN. However, you can get the pamphlets which have the act in it from OREC or the Oklahoma Bar Association.
It's a 17-page document.
Pamphlets from where?
From the Oklahoma Bar Association does have pamphlets. You can call the Oklahoma Bar Association and request those. I don't remember the cost of those, if you want to buy a number of them. Or you can look at them online at okbar.org.
Download it from the Oklahoma Real Estate Commission or just download it from the Oklahoma Bar Association. We're running out of time. We need to have you back next week, Ron.
Yes, ma'am.
We'll talk about things from the landlord side of it. Yeah. And we'll have more with Ron Shalhoub, our lawyer. Thanks, Ron, for being with us on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK.